Chapter 7. Obedient Virgins.
The ceremonial for profession of vows in the monastery is so preoccupied with the vow of virginity that you would think it the only vow the novice was making. In ancient times, the ritual was known simply as that for the consecration of virgins. It is a great mistake to think that the state of virginity solemnly vowed to God is no different from the state of single persons in the world. The unmarried woman is free to change her state of life whenever she wishes. The consecrated virgin has given her entire future into the hands of God, signed with a changeless seal. The motive of the religious is unique. She wishes to give herself, body and soul, to God. The positive aspect of holy virginity is far too often entirely ignored. Virginity is thought to be a mere abstention. Many think it a blight on the development of the personality. One cannot experience the fullness of happiness in the virginal state, they maintain. It needs only one long look at the faces of nuns, one long listen to their laughter, to blow this proposition sky high. Virginity is not only a giving, but a receiving. If properly understood, it is a glorious enrichment. This carries over into the spiritual life and gives a poor Claire interior confidence and spiritual poise in whatever sorrows and trials may lie ahead. She knows she is loved, cherished, chosen. Consecrated virginity is not sterile, but fecund with spiritual life. The Psalms, the contemplative loves, write her history in words of flaming truth. Many are the children of the barren, more than of her than hath a husband. Many as the number of souls in the world are the children of a cloistered nun. The life of souls stirs always beneath her heart, and a sinner reclaimed leaps for joy in the warmth of her soul, for it houses him. A poor Claire vocation is a vocation to be the mother of the world. It is a reflection of the vocation of the Mother of God, whose glorious exaltation is unthinkable without virginity. It is likewise the fullest participation for a woman in the life of Holy Church, the Bride of Christ. And the strength of the Church increases with the sacrificial life of each of her consecrated virgins. Virginity is the essence of the religious consecration to God, and its most positive aspect. Obedience, on the other hand, may be called a disciplinary vow. Religious life without obedience would be a three-ring circus. Complete, continual, unswerving obedience comes naturally to no one. It is true, though, that the seed bears more luxuriant fruit in some. Self-will is said to die only 15 minutes before we do. Or is it 15 minutes after? To add to nature's objections, the devil scatters light powder into a postulant's eyes during the first weeks of her religious life so that she forgets that she has actually been taking orders all her life, obeying superiors ranging from the dean of the college or the head of office personnel to the traffic policemen who tell us when we may cross the street. To turn a full and loving gaze on obedience is to come into immense riches of liberty and the most complete exercise of our freedom. Contemplative nuns freely elect to obey a monastic rule inspired by God. The poor Claire sweeping the monastery cloisters is doing it for God's sake and prefers sweeping at that particular hour to any other occupation in the world. Obedience really transfigures our religious life. The novice promises not just to obey orders, but to live in obedience. She makes her whole future existence a kind of vast dwelling place through which she can walk in perfect security always. An obedient religious simply cannot blunder while she obeys. The superior may be wrong in commanding, but the subject is still right in obeying. It is the headiest exercise of our liberty to be free to obey. When a poor Claire vows to live in obedience, her two hands are cradled in the hands of her abbess. Each year of her life, a professed nun repeats that gesture when she kneels before the altar and privately renews her vows, "I again vow and promise God, and you, Mother." Always that phrase, "and you, Mother." Sometimes, at renewals, the abbess is holding two slender young hands, sometimes square, blunted hands, sometimes gnarled old hands. But the beauty and significance remain unchanged. Here is my religious life, which is willingly subject to your authority, which I entrust to your love and wisdom, which is yours to direct and sanctify, Mother. Is there anything ignoble about the child who is sure that full security against all dangers is to be had by simply placing its hands in the hands of its mother? And what do we get for such dependence? Nothing short of the certainty of an eternity of happiness. "And I," replies the abbess, "promise you, if you observe this, life everlasting." This is quite a promise for one mortal to make to another. Holy Church gives the abbess leave to make it, putting life everlasting, in a sense, into her hands to dispense to her daughters. A poor Claire abbess is a higher superior, that is, she has full rights over her subjects, and not just limited rights as superiors of active orders have. Whenever St. Clare's admonitions to the abbess are read in the refectory, I always hear the swish of Our Lady's mantle. There is so much of gentleness, of sweetness, and of love. Of course, it is not the business of the abbess to get a good grip on her authority and let love go by the board. St. Clare wants the abbesses of her order to be leaders in virtue and superior to the other nuns in holy behavior. For mere authority, as such, never takes hold of our hearts, but virtue and holy lovableness do. And to the abbess, each daughter is child. When I was a novice, Sister Evangela, at 90, she lay dying in the infirmary, very cheerful. Sister Evangela was old enough to have been Mother Abbess's grandmother, yet it did not seem ludicrous, but only tender and completely right that mother should support the frail old body in her arms and ask, "Are you comfortable, child?" When Mother Abbess renews her holy vows each October, I always feel a little sorry for her. She has no one's hands to cradle her own. She begins her formula of renewals with the same words, "I again vow and promise God." But she cannot complete it with the tenderly warm addition, "And you, Mother." And no one promises her life everlasting when she finishes speaking. St. Clare wanted the abbesses who succeeded her in office to be such that the other nuns could obey them, not so much from the sense of duty as from love. When the abbess can command that sort of obedience from her monastic children, St. Clare herself promises her life everlasting.